You are now listening to the Sinise Unfiltered Podcast with your host, Anthony Sinise, a hip, fresh, unfiltered perspective on all things dealing with sports, wrestling, music, politics, and everyday life. So get ready for the most opinionated man in the business. And now, Anthony Sinise.
This is the KID, the Kid Capri. What's going on, Ant? Congrats on a new podcast, bruh. It's a great show, and I advise all of you to subscribe and listen. You can check out the newest episode of Sinise Unfiltered.
What up? It's your boy Ant. Welcome to the Sinise Unfiltered Podcast. And this is part two of the greatest show ever. And we're talking about Sopranos. And I have my man, my brother, nobody else better to talk Sopranos with, my man Brian Forbes. What's up, boy?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. What's up with you? Everything cool up there?
Yeah, you know, getting through it, getting ready for this cold weather, but Yeah,
we got this bad storm coming down here, man. I had a podcast I was supposed to do today, but I had to cancel it because our Wi-Fi was out, so I didn't even think it was going to work too well, but hopefully we can get through it here.
Okay.
Yeah. So, man, you know, last time you joined me, you know, when we did the podcast and I had John Fiore, you know, from Sopranos on. After listening to his interview, kind of told you there was a few things that was kind of a little surprise he was going to talk about. And he talked about the movie that might be coming up. What were your thoughts on that and it maybe becoming a series?
I mean, I would entertain it, you know. I'd be interested to see what network the show is going to come out on. But I thought that the concept was great.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I can't wait for the movie to come out next year. And it has to be on HBO. It can't be on anything else.
You know, right. That's what I was alluding to, that, you know, if HBO picks it up, then I know that they're going to try to make it, you know, just as good as the first one. Yeah. Just because that's how they do it. So, I would get very excited if HBO picked it up.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. So, you know, getting into, and I had a list, and I don't know what the hell happened to it, but I wanted to talk about, there were so many stars that have passed away from Sopranos that I wanted to go over with you with, but I don't know what happened to my list, so there goes that.
well, can you think of a couple off the top of your head? I mean, because I can think of a couple. I mean, we already talked about Tony, but...
Yeah, I know the head of the FBI, that dude with the glasses, I know he passed away like a couple years ago. I saw that one.
Yeah.
Who else passed away?
Frank Vincent.
Yeah, played, Frank Vincent, yeah.
He was a good character in that show.
Yeah.
I mean, he came on towards the end, but I really liked, you know, how he went back and forth with Tony and, you know, his mannerisms and what he said. And, I mean, he was just a terrific actor. In general, he made some great great movies. He was in some great movies.
Your fucking shine box.
Exactly.
So, yo, so while we're talking about characters, man, you know, of course, everybody, we love Tony. What was your, who do you think was your most underrated character on that show?
Most underrated character on the show?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, what do you mean, just their acting ability?
No, just like somebody that I think that was slept on, like was a good character, but you think they could have did more with them?
Let me see. I don't know. I mean, off the top of my head, from Tony's, you know, crew, I did like Walden, the character that ended up shooting Phil, Frank Vincent. Mm-hmm. I liked his character, and he was only around really for, you know, that last season.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, the character that I would have liked to see developed a little bit more, I didn't really like the arc that they took Anthony Jr. down.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have preferred if he would have, you know, stayed with Blanca and they would have done, you know, something more with those two other than what they did at the end, which was, you know, have him, her break up with him, and then he, you know, basically went crazy. So, I didn't really like that. So, I would say maybe Blanca,
okay.
Blanca's character and Anthony Jr. Maybe, I could have stood to see a little bit more Richie Aprile.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for me, I mean, to me, he was a big character, but I just felt they could have did a little more with Pauly, man. Because to me, Pauly was so funny. You know, he was a badass and take no shit. I felt they could do a little more with Pauly, man. I love Pauly.
In terms of what would you like to have seen them done? I mean, because you know he wasn't the type of guy that was, like, going to get married and, like, have a real relationship. I mean, that was established from, you know what I mean? I think the opening season.
I think just more of him. Because remember, there was a lot of seasons where you didn't see a lot of him. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, but I think that particular season that you're talking about is season 4, where you don't see him till like the 9th episode. There's a reason for that. I forgot what happened. He was
in jail or something, right?
Something like that. Well, he on the show he was in jail, mm-hmm. but in real life he was apparently unavailable to shoot. I have to look it up. I've looked it up before and I forgot what the reasoning was, but there was specific reasoning as to why he wasn't in the first 9 episodes of the show. Right. You know what I mean? For season 4. And, you know, once they brought him back, I liked the end of that season. I like how he went back and forth with Ralph. That was great.
Yeah. Well, like a hater Ralph, you were. So what character was your least favorite of the show? To me, you know, it was Louis Lombardi. I couldn't stand him, man. You know, the guy played Skip, the big pussy.
You didn't like the lisp that he talked with?
I couldn't stand that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't on enough for me to make him my least favorite character just because his screen time was so short. But I would think somebody that had an extended role that I didn't really care to see Actually, I'm going to give you 3. I'll give them to you quick. The first one is Finn. I didn't like who they cast for his character. Mm-hmm. He was just annoying. That's number one. Same thing for the number two. It was a casting error, I thought. When Meadow, you know, came home with the quote unquote African American boyfriend.
Yeah.
He wasn't, you know what I mean? He wasn't really African American.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They could have went out and got a straight up black dude to play that role. And it would have, to me, it would have jived better, especially if the dude came from the same background as the guy that they cast. His father was a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They had money, whatever, entertainment lawyer, whatever. You know what I mean? They had money. So I would have liked to have seen that dynamic. And I would like to have seen it a little bit more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But they chose to do that. The third character that I didn't really care for, and he's actually should have been number one on the list, is Jackie Jr.
Are you like Jackie Jr.?
Not at all.
Really?
No, not at all.
I don't think you were that bad.
I don't know. I think he tried a little bit too hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't as natural for him as it was for everybody else.
Yeah, especially when Ralph became made try to play that gangster role. Trying to be a gangster, which he wasn't.
Exactly.
Yep. So, you know, coming up, I got Robert Fenaro coming up. After our little interview, we're going to have an interview with him that I did the same time I did John Fiore. I did this interview, but I thought I'm going to put them together, but like, no, let me do like a two-part for this episode. What was your favorite scene of Sopranos?
My favorite
Your favorite scene, yeah.
Jeez, come on. That's a tough question.
Yeah, it is. I had to think about it when I was thinking about questions to ask you, you know, different from last time, and I was like, shit. When I thought about that question, like, damn, I got to think about it too.
Well, I mean, just because you put me on the spot, and I'm sure other stuff is gonna pop into my head, but off the top, I'm gonna have to say my favorite scene is when Tony is at the Tony's in a session with Dr. Melfi. I believe it's the same episode. I think it's season two from Where to Eternity. He goes in there after Christopher gets shot and he's talking to her, and he just belts into this tirade about people coming, when the Italian people came over here, and, you know, what they wanted to preserve, and, mm-hmm. you know, how some of them wanted a piece of the action, and, you know, how he was talking about J.P. Morgan Chase and big banks and stuff that were crooks and killers, too, which they were, you know what I mean? So he was, you know, trying to use that as an analogy, and I kind of like that scene, how he flowed in that scene to take one off the head.
Yeah.
That's what I got for you. What about you?
Me, my favorite one is season 5. And I think you're probably going to love this one too. When fucking Junior kept fucking with him. He never had to make it to a varsity athlete. And when they were at Janice's house, and remember, he talked to me like, you've been saying it, and it's very hurtful. You know? So you think that was the end of it. Then he said it again at the end. He's like, God damn it! What did I tell you? Get your jacket, we're leaving. What happened? He's like,
That is a funny scene. And that's the thing. A lot of the scenes with Junior are funny. Yeah. I was going for a more serious scene. If I had to pick a funny scene, I would have to say the scene where Tony is with Gloria. He's eating. They're getting ready to eat. He gets that call from Paulie. Paulie and Christopher are in the woods. He leaves. Now, one runs right into the other. That's why this is so funny. Uh-huh. So she hits him with the steak. Obviously, that's funny. You know what I mean?
I know you're going.
Then he goes to Junior's house. And then Junior's like, you been eating steak? He looks at him. And then to top it all off, he pours himself a drink. And then Bobby comes to the door dressed how he's dressed. That whole sequence right there is the funniest of the entire show to me. I'm glad I thought
of that. Yeah, this shit was funny, man. Yeah, Bobby with the fucking hole.
Right. He was like, Tony just breaks down and starts laughing. And he's like, fuck this. I don't gotta take this.
You do what my nephew says.
He's like, I got my limits too, Junior.
Oh man!
Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah, man.
Lots of funny.
It's hard to pinpoint one. You know what I'm saying?
If I had to think about it, there's more. I think there's more funny, rememberable scenes than actual serious ones. I mean, the serious ones were great, but that darker comedy, and like I said, if you actually got a lot of the stuff that they were saying, it's funny to me.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people did though. So,
yeah, some people. Oh man, what's the scene that that Matt tagged us in the other day? Oh, I'm trying to think what it was.
Oh, they were on the.
Oh yeah,
that was when they're on the boat. You're right.
My man, Paulie Wallace, man, fucking wingman. So yo, you know the holidays are coming up, man. And you know what that means? It means one thing. Fuck you, Santa.
I'm telling you, December 24th at about 11:30, 12 midnight. I'm sure it'll be playing.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, man. I put there's a radio station down here in Orlando. It's like all 80s music, and they say, "What is your favorite quote from a Christmas movie or anything that's to do with Christmas?" And I just put the middle finger, you and Santa. I like real fans will get it.
Exactly,
real fans will get it.
Exactly.
Well, hey, my brother, you know what I'm saying? I want to thank you for chopping it up real quick. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, there's nobody else I'd rather talk Sopranos with than have you on here.
Appreciate that, my man. I had a great time both times, and I look forward to the episode with my man Eugene Pontecorvo.
Yeah, man, it's a really good episode. You know, and oh, it's a really good interview. And you know, go ahead, man.
I was just going to say, it's funny that you're getting ready to drop that interview because I'm watching season 5 right now. And I just passed the part where they're at the construction site and Finn's there and they're all laughing and, you know what I'm saying, telling jokes. And then little Paulie says something that Eugene doesn't like, and Eugene walks over to him and hits him with the bottle. Yeah. And then Finn freaks out and, you know, goes home and says Eugene, and Meadow's like, Eugene Pontecorvo? He's the sweetest guy. It was just funny. It's like I said, funny that you're having that interview now. So
it's a good one, man. And one thing, you know, talking to him, what I didn't realize, and you know, once you listen to the episode, you know, you hear it. Him and Tony were really close. Like Tony actually is the one that helped him get on the show, and they were. I'll let you listen to it, but they were really close, man. They were really close. And, you know, I enjoyed the interview. But yeah, man, you know, appreciate you coming on again.
Yeah, definitely, man. Anytime.
No doubt. Yo, this your boy, Ant. We got my man, Robert Fernando from The Sopranos, coming up right after this. This is my man, Brian Forbes. We out. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Robert Fornaro, AJ, also known as Mr. Eugene from Sopranos. How you doing, sir?
Hey, Anthony. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great, my man. How's everything going with you this morning?
Okay, it's the NYC.
Well, yeah, it's a hot day here.
I hear you. How hot is it?
Oh, it's about almost 85 degrees here in Orlando already.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I'm getting ready. I'm going to take my sons to the ball, practice some basketball in a little while. So,
Right on.
Yes, sir.
You got the basketball. They have the dome there, right? That's where they're playing the playoffs?
Yeah, yeah.
At Disney?
Yep, down there at Disney. It just sucks that we can't go. We can't go and watch it.
Yeah, it's terrible. What are you going to do?
Yep. So, man, hey, this is an honor for me, man. You know, I love Sopranos. This is the my favorite all-time show, as well as many others. Love this show. When did you want to pursue an acting career? What made you want to pursue an acting career?
Oh, my family, my uncle, God rest him soul, and Father Joseph, he was a priest, and he used to put up these plays. He started a an acting company for the church, in Howard Beach in New York, and the Gracian plays. And from there, it kind of built momentum. It snowballed into, as he progressed in the his priesthood, he was very good at fundraising, a very good talker, like all actors are. Mm-hmm. And he was a director. So later on, he worked for Catholic Charities, and he would put up these productions, these musical productions that were professionally done with some of the original people. He never lost sight of the original people he used. And he would produce them for Catholic Charities, and he would get it on NBC once every year to talk about the show and have people come. And we raised some fun, a lot of funds for the church. And I would go to them, off my family, my dad, my mom would take me to them, my brothers and sisters. It would all be a yearly event that we would go. He produced one a year. And that's how I got the bug.
Okay.
Cool. Of course, you know, watching films, and there always was, you know, film, a lot of great films back then in the late 60s and mm-hmm. the 70s, and Steve McQueen and The Great Escape and all that stuff. You know, it was a magical time back then.
Okay. So the Sopranos role, how did you come across that role? And when you got this role, because you know, I talked to John Fiore a few days ago, and he said when he got his role, you know, they told him they weren't sure how many episodes it was going to be, but it was also kept very quiet. Like, okay, you'll be here next week. You'll be here next week. How was it with the whole Sopranos interviewing process?
Well, there was a big element of secrecy. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people doing shows let the cat out of the bag. And the big thing about Sopranos was the element of surprise. David Chase always kept the American audience surprised. I landed the role because about 8 years prior to Sopranos, did a play with James Gandolfini in Europe. It was one of our first professional jobs. We toured Streetcar Named Desire in Scandinavia. It's hard to believe, but there was a producer who would look for New York actors. They did Cuckoo's Nest in Germany the year prior, and I heard of it on the grapevine, but never really took it seriously. And then it just happened to be that they were doing Streetcar, and I auditioned for it, and I landed the role. We did 3 months in Sweden, in Norway, and Finland this tour. Sometimes we would do big theaters, and especially in Sweden, they have really nice theaters. And then we would do bistros, like in Finland, they had a bistro. So the producer, he would set up like a tour, like a musical tour, like a road tour. Some nice places, some not so nice places. In Norway, it was kind of like bars, some theaters too. But as the play progressed, we all got better and better, and then we lost sight of each other. And I'll tell you how it happened for me. A friend of mine went up to James Gandolfini at a party in New York City. He had done True Romance. He had gone to L.A., come back to New York, and it was after the first year, actually after the second year of Sopranos. It was a big hit success, and James was always approachable. My friend approached him and said, "Hey, if I was you, I'd get you one of your good friends a part on The Sopranos." "Oh yeah, who's your good friend? That who's my good friend?" "Bobby Fornaro." "Oh really, Bobby? How's he doing?" And yeah, because you know my friend Gordon Silva, he knew about he knew that we did this play together, and he said to James, "Oh, he's working at Caroline's on Broadway at a comedy club, and it just happened to be in season 3 they were casting." And James took his driver, Joe Fay, great guy, still around, around the comedy clubs. I don't think he remembered which comedy club. And after work one day, after shooting, and he found me at Caroline's, and he was waiting down at the bar, and I walked in. I was a manager. I started as a bouncer, but I ended up as a manager. Mm-hmm. And I walked in. I saw him having a drink at the bar. I said, "James, what the hell's going on? What are you doing here?" So I came to talk to you. I got, you know, I had this role on the show. I'd like for you to audition. I can't promise you anything, but why don't you give it a shot? And this goes to show you how James was. The rest is history. Mm-hmm. I got landed a role. I auditioned, and that process was grueling. It was like the Inquisition, Anthony.
Really? Wow.
But it was really a, you know, a wonderful experience when I look back at it.
Mm-hmm.
Going through it, it was grueling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have ever auditioned or done anything like that. It is sort of there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of questioning. Did I do this right? Did I do that wrong?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, along the way, there were signposts that I was doing well. I always got the call back. And I finally reached Silver Cup Studios, where I had an audition for the whole crew,
mm-hmm.
everyone. David was into this communal thing because it was a family kind of set. And it always remained that way for me as long as I was on the Sopranos. People were treated with respect,
uh-huh.
and that hierarchy that you experience. You know, the business is a very quick business. You got to do things, you know, in a sense. But there is when you're on set, this hierarchy and those walls were shattered when it came to Sopranos. Mm-hmm. Everyone mixed with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think James created that. He didn't like. I think he disliked that hierarchy and he wanted to. And I think it reflected in the performances of from the small roles to the larger roles in Sopranos.
Okay. Describe your character in your own words, Eugene Pontecorvo.
Well, when I first was given the role, I asked, what's this guy about? They said, we don't know, but we're going to make it up as we go along. So at the end, I guess one could say he had to deal with contemporary issues,
mm-hmm.
like drugs, which was almost like prophetic in a way. The issue with the with my son and his needles and, mm-hmm. and shooting heroin and everything that later on became to be a very, very bad problem with the opiates and the then which later led to heroin abuse. You know, he was dealing with a lot of issues and wanting to, he's a good man. I think he mm-hmm. loved his family enough
Definitely.
To sacrifice his life to liberate them. Mm-hmm. I know it's not said in the following episode, Michael Imperiali, you know, they described me as he was a mutt and stuff like that. But me, it was, to me, always in internally, I always felt that that was the true reason. He was a loyal soldier, very much like Frank Pentangeli in The Godfather. Mm-hmm. Slit his wrist in the bathroom as opposed to ratting out on his best friend who he played CYO basketball with. Great line in that scene. So, it's an all-around guy, so soldier. I guess never really promoted to captain because he knew what he could do best. He was good with his hands, snap mm-hmm. a bottle, and dressing people. And a lot of practice with Snapple bottles.
Oh, yeah. So your last episode was the members-only episode. And you guys, that episode won an Emmy in 2006 for the best writing. How much of an honor was it to be part of that episode?
It was great. I wish I was there, but unfortunately, I was unable to attend the Emmys. They have this rule that if you only do two episodes, that you cannot officially attend. One thing I do regret is not asking James if I could have. Booked a ticket on my own and come out and celebrate it with everyone.
Yeah.
You know, that was my own. Now it's going through a lot back mm-hmm. then, but I do wish I'd have done that. That's one of my regrets. But it was a great honor. I remember talking to Terry, and he said, "Oh, Bobby, I forgot to mention you." But you know, it was all crazy. I said, "That's a, really is that's not a big deal." I mean, to just to be a part of what you wrote there, which was really, I thought, one of the best episodes, solid episodes, with all a lot of different themes, a lot of things on rivers and of people interacting with each other, especially with James. And Tony, what he went through and how it ends in that first episode. And by the way, no one really knew. I was under the impression that I ended the episode when it was really James who got shot.
Yeah.
In that episode, which was great. It was a great twist, but we never knew really how it was going to go. That was the element of secrecy. We were given, everyone was given a certain amount of script to read. We were given the full script, but each person had different scripts. James never told me either how it ended. Maybe he didn't even know himself. He didn't want to know.
Yeah. What was your favorite scene you were in?
Someone asked me that the other day. I suppose I'd have to go to Members Only and the scene when I asked Tony and when I let him know that I inherited the money. That was a good scene. I enjoyed doing that with James. Also, the one with Silvio Dante, with Stevie Van Zandt, when he tells me the news that Tony, it's a no-go.
Yeah, it's a no-go.
I thought that scene was one of my favorite scenes, the way I played that, the ending. You know, I mean... The scene with Deanne, my wife, when I tell her that it's not going to happen, that desperateness of that feeling of being trapped, I thought that came out well. You know, I mean, the scene just before I killed myself. When they shoot to my eyes, I thought that there was a good element of fear and anxiety. And also when I reminisce with the photographic portfolio, with the memorabilia portfolio, you know, what do you call that? Getting old now, Anthony. Photo album.
Photo album, okay.
With the shell, which was written in the part with the shell. Terry wrote that, so it was all. Those are the scenes I really truly enjoyed. The Snapple bottle scene was great. Everyone came up. Do this month. It's, what was that? Oh, you gotta hit somebody over the head with a Snapple bottle. For a trained actor who's been training a pretty long time, it's not the. I was hoping that wasn't what I would be remembered by. And God delivered, as he always
does. Yes, he does. Okay, so besides your character, what was your favorite character on the show?
Well, Tony Soprano, of course. James' brilliance, his genius of playing what's underneath. He was happy, yet he's happy, yet there's an element of depression. How he played that. He's just a brilliant, you know, actor in that sense. That underlying alternating current is the best way to describe it. And I think a lot of great actors have this alternating current. They're happy, yet underneath you see something else was going on. Al Pacino has it. Robert De Niro has it. Of course, Marlon Brando had it. Robert Duvall, Kevin Costner, they're really wonderful actors, and even the little roles. A good friend of mine, Richard Bright, who did Al Neri in The Godfather, he was my mentor. God rest him too. His wife, Tanya Alda. Even the small roles, they're important too. The whole body of a person is important. The fingers, the arms, and if you're treated that way, a director really he shines you up like a great car, and he loves you, you know, and you do great. Marty Scorsese is like that. He loves all the little roles and all the big roles. They all come together, you know, in a symphony.
Yeah. So, yeah, I said, you know, to me, Tony Soprano was the best character on TV of all time. When I talked to Mr. Fiore the other day, I was telling him, you know, I remember getting the news of Jamie's passing. And, you know, being a fan from the show from day one till the end and still constantly watching, you know, a series over and over and over again, you know, you feel like you're part of the Sopranos. You feel like you're part of the family. And when James passed, you know, as a fan, that hurt me. Like, I had to leave work. I'm like, listen, I got to go. I was like, I can't comprehend this right now. You were close to James, as you said. You know, how did this affect you?
I remember the evening, just like I remember the day that John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I was with my mother in Sheepshead Bay in Brooklyn, and she listened to the radio or TV set that was in the Five and Dime store, and she said, "Let's go, we got to go home." And with Jimmy, it was a play reading that I was doing, a Sam Shepard play reading. And I was just coming out of rehearsal when someone told me this. My friend Dan Vitale, a stand-up comedian, told me that James passed away. Just heard the news. I think it was texted on his phone. I couldn't believe it. I was living on the Upper West Side, and I just was so distraught. I decided to walk home to 116th Street from 42nd Street. Oof. And I took 11th Avenue, which is really a deserted avenue. And on the way up there, coming out of a bar was one of the costume designers for Sopranos, not the costume designer, but he worked makeup, or I don't recall his name, but he came out of a bar. He was getting hammered because of what happened. I never forget that. I didn't join him to get hammered because I was in my own head. I just walked up really sad and by the whole, all the news. It was a very, very, very sad day.
Very sad. Can you, I read, they said Tony or James was a perfectionist, you know. Can you talk about his character on the set?
He was always prepared. He knew. I mean, he had it under. By the time I was, you know, there's a lot of questioning when you first start. Mm-hmm. But by the time I was on the show, Jimmy was he was inhabiting Tony Soprano. Mm-hmm. We talk about inhabiting a character. You're actually in that person's skin. That's the person becomes you. Very professional. You know, there were times. They remember one time when he had this big monologue. He was talking to us at a dinner or something. Some of the guys talking about the family. I don't recall what episode it was. He came up to me and he said, "How was that?" So that was brilliant. What are you kidding me? But you know, he was. Jimmy James was competitive. He worked on his stuff with people. You know, a great coach, Susan Aston, who helped me with Members Only. Susan's a wonderful person. You know, James wasn't afraid to say, you know, people helped him along the way. He's very humble and had a lot of humility, but he worked at it. You know, it wasn't like he. A walk in the park. He really truly worked on each scene. Mm-hmm. I was there for every scene, but I'm sure he put the practice in.
Okay.
In order to lie like the truth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, as a fan, you know, watching the show so much, to me, the most shocking death to me was Christopher. I didn't see that one coming. Was there a death on the show to you that you're like, man, I didn't see that coming?
Well, John Fiore, I thought John was brilliant.
Yeah.
I think John is a great actor. I was surprised that when I found out that we had a party for him, and when he found out that he wasn't, he was dead, basically, David Chase calls you up and lets you know. They're nice there. Dave was always a great guy. That was a surprise that he would lose his life on the toilet bowl there.
Yeah.
On the Pichadou, or as Paulie Walnuts described. But, I mean, listen, that was a surprise.
You
know?
Okay.
A lot of surprises. I mean, Vincent Pastore. I mean, he still is. And I've worked with Vincent, you know, outside of The Sopranos. He helped me really get into the theater a lot better in New York City, because he had a theater company with Maureen Van Zandt, who played Silvio Dante's wife. And we were still working. We're doing a with Maureen performance of Closer. It was a play with the Renegade Nation, which is going to be on the Renegade Nation Theater Company online. People will be able to watch her and myself.
Okay.
So Vincent was so loved. That was a really big surprise to me also, because he's just like so. A great character. As you could see, they always David found a way to get him back in dreams, and because he was just so lovable. So it's just one of those characters that you feel really bad that he's gone.
Yeah.
It's too bad it was him. I don't think they can do it to Paulie Walnuts. Now that's a different story. Tony Rico. Got to be careful who you kill.
Yeah. Definitely.
Not only kidding. If they wrote that in, they wrote it in, but they didn't write it in. Yeah. So.
Okay. So what do you think The Sopranos' impact has left on the industry?
Well, when it came out, there was nothing like it.
It never will be.
Well, it was the prototype for so many different TV series. Mm-hmm.
Oh, right? Yeah.
I mean, it really was a look inside at the truth. I think it really was, like you said, there probably never be another show just like there'd never probably be another Beatles or James Brown or some of the great performers, Thelonious Monk and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, they come and they're unique, and it truly was a unique TV series that took on a lot of issues. Like I said, with the drugs and everything, I lost my nephew to substance abuse, Joseph Massey, and tribute to him. And I never really thought that would affect my family. Mm-hmm. But when I look back at it, and I look back at that episode, I said, wow, this is really, I mean, it was ahead of its time.
Yeah.
It really, truly was ahead of its time. And Anthony.
Okay. So, you know, you also were in The Irishman, which was a great movie. Man, I love that movie. Tell me about your experience on The Irishman.
First, let me say, I'm glad that you love that movie. Everyone loved the movie. They read the review in the Times. And then you had the people who were just, oh, it's too long. Oh, I can't
see. Nah, it was great.
I watched a half hour. Then I watched a half hour on Wednesday. Then I finished it on Friday. I mean, what are you talking about? This is Marty Scorsese who did Casino.
Man, once you're in, you're in.
It's like a big book, baby. It's like a big book. It's like War and Peace. Uh-huh. What's the matter? You just can't. People have such short attention spans, Anthony. Yep. The problem. They can't sit down. I know. I find it myself. I'm watching TV. I'm on my phone, social media. I'm even starting. It's bleeding into when I'm talking to my friends, and I got to stop myself from doing it. But that experience on Irishman was one of the highlights of my work to work with. Of course, I worked with Marty on Vinyl, with Bobby Cannavale and Ray Romano and Armin Garrow, who played Galasso. But it was another great experience. It was almost a notch up from Vinyl Irishman. Audition, landed the role, and had the scene with Robert De Niro. But I did know a few of Robert's friends who he came up with. My mentor, Richard Bright, Ritanya Alda, who did Deer Hunter with mm-hmm. him. So I was able to break the ice. I was playing his friend, and I said to myself, well, how am I going to break the ice? Well, I'll talk about, because Robert De Niro is very quiet, and he's very controlled. Mm-hmm. This is what his genius is. He makes as if he's a presence, yet he's not. He's so focused. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very focused. So I broke the ice with talking about Richard and talking about Ritanya Alder, and who was in Mommy Dearest also, but not the non-De Niro film, but Deer Hunter and many of the Brian De Palma's early work. They both worked together, De Niro and her. So I was able to create this relationship, and I felt it coming out. It was blossoming and great experience. We the take that Marty printed was the last take mm-hmm. where he said to me and everyone, okay, do what you want. Just, what do you mean? Just say what you want. Just do it the way I don't care. Just do it any way you know, sit to the script, but if you want to just improvise. And that was the one when I saw it, I was saying, wow, that's the take that we did that he said, because he gives you just tremendous freedom. This freedom we really didn't have on Sopranos mm-hmm. because we really had to stick to the script. In TV, Terry and the writers, they wanted you to stick to the script. If you didn't stick to the script, they'd come back. The assistant director would come to us, the script person would come to us and say, hey, you have to say it this way. Mm-hmm. With Marty, he gave you that freedom. And to see it up there, that take that I kind of ad-libbed a little bit of my, and Steve Zaling, you can't ad-lib to Steve Zaling. What a great writer, Gladiator and Irishman and all the other ones he's written. But there's some of the dialogue that, because Marty knows it, I think you have to go with the actors, because if the actors are indigenous to this, or they know the territory, you might say, they're going to come up with things from the street that a writer, perhaps Steve Zaling, could not create because he really did not have that experience. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that was my experience on Irishman. And the part kept growing. Marty would call everyone in. Some days work, some days not work. But he would call you in if he thought that if you were needed. Even if you weren't needed, he'd like to have you available, because it's like a great paint that likes to have all the paints on the palette. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? In order to use the different colors, the different shades. And I think that the Irishman, another 5 years from now, it's going to be a great film that people are really going to appreciate a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it. So I see you're also a great cook. Where did your love for cooking come from?
Mom, Dad, yeah. We love cooking, Italian food, eating. Uncle Nick, he loved eating. We love to eat us Italian. So I'm not one for going out. I do like to go to nice restaurants, but there's nothing like a home-cooked
yes,
meal,
sir.
a Sunday sauce, and family and friends and chatting. That's what we're all about. You know, I mean, that's great stuff in life. So that's what I learned from my mother. I watched her cook. I asked questions about cooking as I with my family, raised my family. I would ask questions, how to make this dish, how to make that dish for my children. And I still make some of those dishes that she made. Of course, the sauce, the Sunday sauce, mm-hmm. but the dishes that were not so popular by the populace, like peas and macaronis. These are dishes that were, when you didn't have anything in the refrigerator, you created.
Put stuff together, dish. Yeah.
Yeah, and so these dishes came out, and they're very good. Some people like them better than having a porterhouse steak, which I had like You know, Anthony. Mm-hmm. So that's how I learned.
Okay. So I know you said you have the play coming out soon again. What else do you have in the future coming up?
Well, I'm hoping that there's a TV series that I filmed in Nick Denman's TV series, Sean Gloria's TV series called For Nothing, mm-hmm. with Michael Madsen and Daniel Baldwin and myself. And some other great actors, and it's kind of a family mafia thing, but not so street mafia. This feud of families and assassins. And,
oh, sounds great.
And I suppose moral, yeah. So that was done in Buffalo. So I'm hoping that gets the legs that's going to be produced. I mean, I've done a lot of pilots. I know that when they did the Sopranos pilot, a lot of actors said, well, we'll see what this happens. We'll see you down the road. They didn't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I even did a pilot with Jeremy Renner called Unforgettable, The Unforgettables, which only shot about 4 or 5 episodes. I was brought in to just be in the police precinct. It was about policemen. Amber Tamblyn was in it. And I said, wow, this thing is going to go. And Jeremy Renner, he's great. And Hurt Locker came out 4 months after, but the series was canceled. It was really bad timing. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these things, sometimes they go, sometimes they don't. You don't really know.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were reservations with David Chase. Will this happen? Will this not happen? But for everyone, the actors, you really don't know.
Okay. So I know they had a SopranoCon a little while ago. Do you ever see a Soprano reunion, a cast reunion?
Well, that was a big one. We had the Soprano come.
Yeah, I didn't know. I can't believe I didn't know about that.
Too bad. We had a great time. Now we have virtual cons. Mm-hmm. Mike Motor and some of the other guys who put it together, the other two gentlemen who put it together, they're doing virtual cons from Mom Movie Con, and people can go and have an experience with a Soprano, a virtual experience with a Soprano. For instance, I might give you my recipe to my peas and macaroni.
Of course.
And, you know, they charge a fee, of course. Or if you want a picture or something like that, mm-hmm. we can send you pictures and stuff like that. It's called a virtual con.
Okay.
And it's up now. The website is up now. It was christened on James' birthday, September 18th. They started it. They sailed the ship. You know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And now it's out there in the ocean. And I've yet to register. I need to register for it. I'll do that. I've just been a little bit busy. Yeah. So I mean, the reunion was really wonderful to see everyone: Johnny Sack, Vinnie Curatola, Dan Grimaldi, John Fiore. The great thing is that they really asked a lot of the characters, big parts, small parts, Ray Abruzzo, everyone. I mean, Drea was there, and there are a few actors that were not there,
yeah.
But it was a pretty big reunion. It was something else at the Meadowlands in New Jersey.
Nice, nice. So I know they have a Soprano movie coming out early next year. Do you have any details on that?
The Many Saints of Newark. Yes. I really can't tell you too much about it. I only know what I see in the pictures about it. I do probably could say with a definite that COVID-19 probably delayed its release because they're in the middle of filming. I don't know if they were filming, doing their work, or they were doing his work on it. So now everything has to be timed in a different way because of the pandemic. How you're going to do it virtually? Netflix knew in advance that The Irishman was going to be a big TV thing for them, and Netflix was really another ahead of their time in terms of home entertainment. I mean, I do love going to see films, but when you can't, it's nice to have Netflix and Amazon. I suppose these series. Mm-hmm. To watch. I mean, they say that Irishman didn't recoup its money I'm not sure what the story is. I know that that was really bold of Netflix after that great Times review to say, we're not only going to release it in certain theaters. If they would have did a worldwide release,
oh, man.
First weekend, they would have.
Yeah.
The first 2 weeks, they would have recouped all their finances.
Definitely would.
Don't you think
no,
so?
No, hell yeah. Yeah, I was
so
gonna
many
ask
people
that, yeah.
wanted to see Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino yeah. together.
Yeah.
But I thought that was, wow. I was saying, wow, that's wow. I'm still amazed by it because that's a lot of money. There was a lot of money for that film to produce it.
Yep.
I think $155 million.
Oh, wow.
First, I thought $127 million, but... That's Netflix.
Yeah, it's Netflix.
God bless them people over there.
All right. So, Mr. Fennaro, I want to thank you so much for joining me. Again, this is an honor because, like I said, I love this show so much.
Thank you.
Matter of fact, one of my closest friends, Brian Forbes, he's mad because he's not in an interview. He's when I told him I was interviewing you, Mr. Fiore, he's like, what? I should be part of that. But again, man, we want to thank you so much for all the entertainment you've given us.
Pleasure. Real pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much, sir.
You have a good day with your children and have them make some swishes, baby.
Definitely will, sir. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You take care. All right. You too, man.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Same here, brother. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sinise Unfiltered podcast with your host, Anthony Sinise. Tune in again for more unfiltered discussions.